from KQED.
You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Jim Lehrer, co-founder and former anchor of the PBS NewsHour, died at his home in Washington yesterday at the age of 85. The veteran journalist championed delivering unbiased news to the nation for more than three decades. He covered the assassination of John F. Kennedy and the Senate Watergate hearings. He moderated a dozen presidential debates from 1988 to 2012, and he wrote novels, plays, and memoirs. We close today's show with your thoughts and questions about Jim Lehrer, a giant in public broadcasting. And the number to call is 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can also post your comments or questions on Facebook, Twitter at KQED Forum, or email us at forum@kqed.org. With us is Robert McNeil. He's a former anchor at the NewsHour. Welcome to Forum, Robert McNeil.
Thank you.
And we appreciate you being here, as well as Elizabeth Farnsworth, filmmaker, journalist, and former chief correspondent and chief substitute anchor for the PBS NewsHour. Thanks for being with us in studio, Elizabeth Farnsworth.
Thank you. Hi, Robin.
Hi, Elizabeth.
I wanted to offer my condolences to both of you, as I know that he was such a great friend of yours. And, of course, Robert McNeil, you partnered with him on the McNeil-Lehrer Report before that, when it was a half-hour PBS News one-topic show. And I know that you recruited Jim Lehrer to join you as a correspondent on the Robin McNeil Report. And I just wanted to ask you what it was about him, what you saw in him, that made you want to partner with him for your program.
I don't know. Elizabeth could back me up in this, but Jim had an extraordinary capacity for friendship. And unusually for me, the moment I met him, I became his friend. And that's 48 years ago or something. And we found ourselves thrown together on public television after Sandy Van Oker, who was my partner on public television, to do some experimental reporting on the 1972 election. In fact, I would think we were the first program to pay real attention to the Iowa caucuses, for our sins. But anyway, Sandy left under a vicious attack by the Nixon administration, and public television hired Jim Lehrer. And we became instant buddies, and almost our partnership began with a few programs on a weekly show. And then it was announced that the Watergate hearings were going to happen, and public television secured the rights to cover them, and Jim and I found ourselves for 47 days and nights sitting side by side in a studio covering Watergate and driving home each day to where we lived close to each other at the time in Bethesda, Maryland, and becoming very close friends.
And Elizabeth Farnsworth, how long did you work with Jim Lehrer at the PBS NewsHour?
I started reporting for the NewsHour for Robin and Jim in 1984. I had done a documentary here at KQED with Steve Tappet on Guatemala, and we spun off a story. And, you know, I just want you to know, Mina, that I'm sitting here as I'm listening to you and listening to Robin and thinking about Jim. I'm thinking about every pointer that either one ever gave to me about doing this and about anchoring, about being on a show. For example, I'm listening very carefully to what you say and what Robin said. Robin and Jim always said, Jim used to say to me, it's so important just to listen. You make big mistakes if you're interviewing somebody and you're
yes.
not listening. And the short questions, short answers, you both, Robin, you and Jim both. Jim was also a very close friend of mine because we're both from Kansas. We shared that as well as working together.
Yeah.
But I reported from about 1984 on. I became a chief substitute anchor when Robin left and chief correspondent, and did that for many years and then went back to being a foreign correspondent.
And Elizabeth Farnsworth, what influence do you think Lehrer's Kansas roots had on him in terms of his reporting, his interviewing, his journalism?
A lot. I think that Jim was he grew up in a little town called Marion, which I know, and it's in a particularly beautiful part of Kansas. And Jim would drive the back roads of that part of Kansas on vacation, even after he got extremely successful and could have paid to go anywhere. Jim's parents owned a bus company, and it went bankrupt. it was the formative experience in Jim's life. They had to beg for credit from storekeepers, and it just affected him. It gave him, I would call it a hugely powerful ambition and a tremendously deep humility.
Robin McNeil, we hear a lot about Jim Lehrer's approach to the news and, you know, his nine tenets that governed his philosophy about, you know, seeing the viewer as just as smart and caring and good a person as he was, that there was always another side or another version to every story, and that, you know, that the news is not a commodity, and that he is not in the entertainment business. Was that something that he came to you with, or is that something that he developed over the course of his career?
Well, I met him after he'd had a very successful newspaper career.
Sure.
With the Dallas Times-Herald. And when his first novel sold to Columbia Pictures, Viva Max, he had enough money, he thought, to keep his wife and three daughters while he went away and wrote books. Well, instead, he went to public television and kept on writing books. But having been thrown together on the Watergate hearings, we got to know each other very well, very quickly. And Jim was, you know, a lot of people develop a kind of persona for television to shape themselves into what they think television viewers want to watch.
Yes.
Jim was just himself all the time. And the himself you got on the air was what we knew as his friends and colleagues.
Well, I was struck by a comment that he made on CNN just last month. This was in an interview that he gave with Brian Stelter about the situation that he sees journalists in now. And I'd like to play that for you.
The thing is, how do you deal with a division that is based on things that are considered lies?
Right.
And how do you report lies in a straightforward way that that doesn't also put you on one side or the other of the division? And this is the revolution, is how the mainstream, the old-fashioned mainstream press, no matter how old they are or whatever, is to how to report this, and we haven't figured it out.
And again, that's Jim Lehrer speaking on CNN.
That was pretty
a month
typical
ago. Elizabeth Farnsworth.
I think that was pretty typical of Jim's acute ability to name the problem.
Yeah.
To sit in a morning meeting.
And his vehemence in supporting what he firmly believed in, and
yes.
He transmitted that to all of us in the years of working together.
You mean in terms of
Jim was in a way a moralist. I don't mean in the ugly sense of trying to dictate other people's morals, but he had an acute sense of the kind of moral equation in any situation, and he applied that, as I say, vehemently to the business of journalism. He had journalism at the raw front edge of it. Most of his early experience was covering local politics, state government, and you dealt with in the newspaper the people you were likely to meet every day and keep meeting every day, and you learned to treat people decently, which is something much harder to do or less regarded as necessary on television, where you don't see the people necessarily again, especially if you're covering them at a great distance.
And the last thing he would ever think is that he was somehow better than the other people
indeed,
he was questioning.
Indeed.
I mean, it was amazing how careful he was to avoid that, how unsnobby he was.
Well, I'd like to invite our listeners to join this conversation if they have questions or comments they'd like to make about Jim Lehrer, the impact that his journalism had on them. The number 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can post your comments on Facebook, Twitter, or email us at forum@kqed.org. John writes, Jim Lehrer was all about facts, but it must be noted that in a world of alternative facts and charges of fake news, Jim's death is an especially crucial blow. A listener writes, Jim Lehrer will always be remembered as an icon of the free press in modern American media history. And then this listener writes, I remember him saying that he never voted. He wanted to be totally unbiased. Is that true? Robin McNeil.
That is true. Yeah. Yeah. He didn't want to declare, even through voting, which party he supported. And He maintained it to the end.
But I guess what I'm asking when I play that quote of him was that whether or not he was beginning to question whether that delivering unbiased, straight news, even in the face of lies that are being told, and you're reporting on lies, whether or not that was still possible or even appropriate in this environment.
Well, I talked to him a lot about this over the last couple of years when cable television has gone all out to collect audience by taking very firm political positions, either causing or contributing to the huge divisions, political division in the country now. But we both talked about the difficulty of doing what even serious newspapers like The Times and The Washington Post are able to do, and that is publish a column with the story as it appears, and then publish another one questioning the truth of various things the president or somebody else has said.
Right.
Much harder to do that on television. And you can't, we each said to each other, how would we do it now on television? You can't report something, carry, say, the president making a speech outside the White House, and then say, but that was a lie. It's just much harder to do.
Yes, Elizabeth Barnswood. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Robin McGill, if you were wanted to
finish.
I something
about what it was to be there with Robin and Jim as a bosses. Both Robin, you can tell to listening to Robin, and you know Jim, they had very high standards. They demanded a lot from us. They were open in their criticism, kind in their criticism. But I never saw the kind of tension or angers that I saw in other places that I've worked, working under Robin and Jim. I would come back from some place like Peru. I was looking through some files the other day and get letters from both of them about something I'd done on a piece that they liked. So you got praise and you got criticism. And even though both of them, and you can hear just from the way Robin's talking, were so smart and so demanding.
And, of course, Elizabeth Farnsworth is a foreign correspondent, was a foreign correspondent for the NewsHour, reporting from Iran, Iraq, Vietnam, Latin America, and a chief substitute anchor for Lair on the NewsHour. I love something you told our producer, that one of the NewsHour's unofficial mottos was, we dare to be boring.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, well, some people accused us of being the best radio program on television. When we planned to go to the half hour and were prepared from the half hour to the full hour and were preparing for that, some people, including people close to me, said it already feels like an hour. But look, if we dared to be boring, what we dared to be was different. And my mantra, as Elizabeth knows, is if you're going to be on public television, you've got to be better than commercial television, or at least different from. Otherwise, you've got no business begging for public money. And better than is always going to be a matter of individual taste and judgment. And lots of people don't think we were better. But it different from is, I think, demonstrable even in the surviving program today. So to have created a program that has lasted for more than 45 years, non-commercial hour at the beginning of prime time on national television, is something I think we're all proud of.
In 2011, Robin McNeil, Jim Lehrer stepped down from the NewsHour. Can you talk about how he made that decision, how he wanted to manage his exit?
Well, he did it in the same way that I did mine more than 10 years earlier. I just felt I had done it long enough. And a lot of journalism before that long enough, and he felt he'd done it long enough. He also had health issues, you know. He'd had a serious heart attack. He'd recovered from that with a bypass operation. Then some years ago, he had his aortic valve replaced, but he was doing really well. And the astonishing thing was that he'd been to the hospital only 2 days before he died, the hospital where he always went for his checkups, and everything looked really positive, his wife Kate told me. And then the next morning, she got up early and went up to the bedroom with some coffee for him, and he had died in bed. Anyway, he just felt he'd done it long enough, and it was time to pass the baton on.
Well, Elizabeth Farnsworth, leave us with a favorite memory or story.
I'm glad you asked, because I just thought
Jim Lehrer in our last 1 minute.
When, I can't remember why we were – we had an internal messaging service at the NewsHour, and I can't remember what we were messaging about, but somehow it came up what we like to read. And I think I got a little bit braggy, and I said my favorite novel was War and Peace, and he wrote me back, and he said, what I most like to read is the Kansas Central bus schedule.
That's what he most liked to read.
He would never have said that Tolstoy was his favorite author, I don't think.
Well, I want to thank you both for coming on so shortly after the death of such a dear friend. This listener, I want to leave you with this tweet because it just talks about his lasting impact. This listener tweets, I can't say I was aware of Mr. Lehrer before his death. However, NewsHour has been part of my daily news diet for years, and I'm happy he existed and created what he did. Elizabeth Farnsworth, Robert McNeil, thank you both for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Mina.
Pleasure.
And thank you to our listeners for their remembrances. I'm Mina Kim. You've been listening to Forum. Have a great weekend.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.